Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
It's hour number four. Welcome back. Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690, the Irish Embassy pregame show, Habs Rangers. An hour from now, Dan Robertson and Sergio Mameso on the call, as per usual. Should be a good one. I think it's a rivalry. These two guys have higher rivalry standards than I do. Connor McKenna in for Mitch Melnick. Mitch Gallo is here, so is Rod Francis. David Trentadue is here helping us out. And right now, just past 6 o'clock on a Thursday, you know what that means? Time for Pierre LeBrun of ESPN, of TSN, of RDS. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. I apologize ahead of time to the listeners. I'm alone with my three young kids, so it might be an entertaining hit here.
Good. Great. Awesome. Hey, did you have a good time in Columbus this past weekend?
Yeah. You know, the event was superbly hosted. The game was horrid, as always, but the other events surrounding the game were terrific. I thought the Jackets did a superb job. I've been to a lot of these events, and there's actually a lot of work between the World Cup announcement and the Board of Governors on Saturday. It was a busy time, but yeah, it was good.
It was in a great town. I did not know and did not expect it to be as much fun as it was.
It's got a bit of the New England, even though it's in Ohio, but that cobblestone street, old school feel to it, like some of the old streets in Philly and Boston, and a couple of fine establishments. I believe I saw you in there, Connor.
Yeah, that might have happened a few times. All right, Pierre. So Martin Brodeur is where we'll start today. We had a chance to talk to Lou Lamoriello earlier today here on TSN 690.
Monty made all of those decisions as easy as they possibly could be, you know, for all the right reasons. You have to be very, very careful, you know, where you get your heart and your head mixed.
So he joins the St. Louis Blues in a front office position. It seems kind of weird, Pierre, to see him with the Blues and not the mm-hmm. Devils.
Yeah, I spoke with Lamoriello about an hour after it was announced back on Tuesday, and you know, it was clear already, as fresh as the news was, that Lamoriello had already been in the loop on it, that Brodeur had run a lot of this through him. So that's important to note, because I think there's some conspiracy theorists out there that are trying to, you know, put a wedge in between the Devils and Brodeur. I don't think that's really the case. I think what this is Brodeur is like your typical hockey player. He started something in St. Louis this year and feels like he's got to finish it, right? And he would have rather that finished it as the backup goalie, but that position wasn't available once Brian Elliott came back and Jake Allen went back as the backup. So this is the next best thing. And, you know, the guy that's not getting a lot of credit in all this is Doug Armstrong. I mean, he's the guy that came up with this. Think about that. Who would have predicted a month ago that Doug Armstrong would have gone to Marty Brodeur and said, I know you're probably going to retire, but why don't you stick around as my special advisor? No one would have seen that coming. That's a pretty sharp move on the Armstrong's part.
Well, just hypothetically, something I was thinking about during the press conference today, Pierre. If, let's say, Brian Elliott goes down with injury, you have Marty Brodeur there. Do you bring him back?
I think Brodeur shot that down today pretty good, yeah. Yeah, and I think there are matters of retiring and unretiring involved with CBA. I can't remember again. I'd have to go back and look, but... I'm not convinced that's actually an option. I think it's an option in an emergency situation. Like, you know, how sometimes you see a trainer go in as the backup.
I didn't we see like, Dwayne you know, Rolison go in as
right,
a backup?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the tall, I forget his name, the tall video guy for the Caps. He's done that, I think, twice, but because he's a former goalie. Huh. But other than that, I don't think so. I think you could tell in Brodeur's voice today that he's moved on. He's given this some thought. And you know, he let it slip today, and I don't know how many people picked up on it, but he talked about running a team by himself one day.
Huh.
And I thought that was interesting. Now, he doesn't know if he'll do it, but I think the next few months will give him a sort of window into whether that's something that would interest him.
I always find, and I know you've dealt with him for so long and know the guy well, that goaltenders, I love talking to goaltenders. I find them to have sort of a different... A bit of a different perspective from where they see it and how they see the game. How do you see Brodeur being as an executive?
I think he would be outstanding. The one thing, you know, just judging from the conversations that a lot of us have had with him over the years, I mean, he's a guy that would go in Lamoriello's office and pick his brain all the time about why he was doing this or why he was doing that. So that's the first thing you look up. I mean, there's some players you just know would have no interest in that. Some guys just want to golf the rest of their lives, and that's fine. I'd probably be in that domain myself, but but you could tell that Brodeur has always been intrigued by, you know, why teams operate in a certain way, etc. The one thing that I don't think Brodeur himself knows yet, and that's why he has to put sort of dip his toe in the water now, is that he has to find out for himself if he's, you know, wanting with his heart to put in the kind of work it takes to actually be in management. I mean, it is a bit of an eye-opener for some people. You may remember Brett Hall was GM very briefly for the Dallas Stars, and he realized, this is cutting into my golf time too much. You know, Steve Yzerman, you know, did a really smart thing. He did essentially, by being vice president of Ken Holland for a couple of years, he was really just doing his apprenticeship and getting his Red Wings college degree in management, and, you know, realized after a while that he could handle it and was interested in doing that. But it's a huge time commitment. And I think sometimes it surprises former players that make the jump just how much it is. I mean, it's in many ways, it takes over your life more than your playing career did, which is saying something.
We're talking to Pierre LeBrun, part of the Irish Embassy pregame show on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Connor McKenna with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo until 7 o'clock. Habs Rangers coming your way on TSN 690. How about that game last night, Pierre, between the Blackhawks and the Kings?
Yeah, that was, you know, it's funny. Until the playoffs come, you're kind of happy with the regular season because the hockey's usually fairly good. And then when the playoffs come, you're reminded again what a completely different ballgame it is. Well, the playoffs came last night at Staples Center. And the reason they did is not only because these two teams have become great rivals. I mean, arguably the two best, most important franchises in hockey the last 5 years, two cups apiece. But, and there's a raw emotion between those two teams. You could see it on every shift last night. But also because the Kings are now playing for their lives. You know, they're not sitting in a playoff spot. They will be by the end of this. Anyone who bets against that is crazy. But you could see the urgency, you know, in that Kings comeback last night, and it made for superb hockey. I mean, the Hawks visibly looked upset when they left the ice last night. And I'm not sure that's the same had they lost in Arizona. I mean, there's a real, real raw emotional rivalry between those two teams, and you really hope you can see them play again this spring.
It doesn't look like Slava Voynov is going to be playing for them anytime soon. Can they, will they attempt to replace him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hard to say. Chatted with a Kings source a couple of days ago, and they've had meeting after meeting after meeting in those Kings offices the last couple of weeks. Most recently, a lot of it had to do with Mike Richards, but the week before that, there were a lot of scouting meetings and management meetings having to do with, you know, who are we? What are we doing? Should we do something short term? Do we need to start turning this over? So there have been some real interesting internal debate and dialogue. And the Kings do things like no other team. I think I've talked about this before on Mitch's show, but you know, Dean Lombardi likes to challenge people in his front office, but also doesn't mind hearing opposing opinions. So it becomes a sort of big gab fest when the Kings have these meetings, and they go forever. I mean, these are long meetings, and they really talk about everything and trying to figure out, you know, what their next step is. I'm not convinced, even though they've talked to a lot of teams about acquiring a top four defenseman, now I'm not so sure that they haven't maybe decided, unless it's a deal that really comes to us, maybe we just need to, you know, stick with what we have here, and if we make it, we do, and if we don't, we don't. I think there's a bit of pause right now in their reaction and their analysis.
Do you think down the road Cody Franson could be a good fit there, or do you think maybe the asking price would be too high for them?
Again, I don't know if a rental player makes sense at this stage for LA, depending on the assets they have to give up. They've given up a lot of assets to stay on top the last few years. So, again, I think that's some of the debate that's happening internally. And you know, the Leafs are going to try to sign Franson first, but I don't think they will offer what Franzen Camp believes is out there for them July 1st, and frankly, they're probably right. So, yeah, there's a number of interesting defensemen that should be in the market. Mikhailik from Arizona, good shot blocker. he'll be traded. He's a pending UFA. I keep saying this, but Andrés Sequeira is, to me, the star of this year's deadline. I cannot believe that there is more interest in him now. He may not be available. Carolina can sign him over the next few weeks, but Ron Francis, the GM of the Hurricanes, told me recently that it's cut and dry. Either he signs or they trade him. And this is a guy at 44 points last year, puck moving D. I'd be all over that guy if I was a contender. And of course, Franzen, for sure, especially since he's right-handed, will be in huge demand if once the Leafs put him on the market.
So you mentioned Mihalik, and they're in Phoenix, or Glendale more precisely. You wrote about this. I mean, the Coyotes, there's some big things coming before the trade deadline, are there not?
Yeah, that's right, Connor. And it just so happened the timing was right, I guess, but there was about three or four of us, myself and Elliot Freeman and Chris Johnson yesterday. Just the three of us happened to chat with Don Maloney after a Coyotes practice at the Leafs suburban facility, which was attended by no other media. And Maloney basically completely unveiled the entire thinking of the organization after having had recent meetings with ownership. And it's reset is the word that he used. You know, which is basically rebuild, but they don't want to do a long-term thing. They want to go young. They're going to trade their UFAs, but they think they can do a quick turnaround here over the next 2-3 years, you know, because of the base already with Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Mikael Bodker and Max Domi's coming. He didn't say this, but you can read between the lines. Clearly, if they can get McDavid or Eichel, that'll be huge. And then the one thing he did say, Maloney, is that he loves this low Canadian dollar because he can see some of his competitors sweating it out in terms of what they're going to do with their roster next summer if there's not as much cap ceiling available. And what he intimated is the Coyotes have the financial backing of new ownership to go after some players that might suddenly become available that weren't available otherwise because teams have to get under the cap. So that's going to become a new device for some teams that have cap room that want to improve themselves in the offseason.
Sounds like they're having some fun there in the background, Pierre.
Yeah, the kids just finished dinner, and now they're screaming at me to put on Teenage Ninja Mutant Turtles. So I told them I got to finish my radio hit first.
Oh, man, I feel horrible for holding them back. I was a big TMNT fan when I was a kid. I know where they're coming from. you've had a chance to speak with Mike Richards, I believe, and definitely have been on this for a couple of days now. What does the future hold for him right now?
Well, we only, you know, he doesn't want to speak right now. We've texted, and he politely said, let me get my, you know, wrap my head around this. So I can't say I really interviewed him, not yet anyway. You know, he's reported to Manchester. I checked with the Kings again today to make sure that did transpire, but he got there last night, and he's supposed to be in the lineup tomorrow night for Manchester. So, you know, I was thinking today with the AHL announcement that there are five teams moving to California next year, including Manchester. 1 year too late for Mike. I mean, the Kings are moving to Ontario, California, which I think is just 37 miles from where the Kings play. Can you imagine? It would have been an easier thing to swallow had it been for Mike right now. But this is tough for Mike. I mean, this absolutely, from what I understand from talking to people close to him, hit him like a sledgehammer. He did not see this coming and took this hard and now needs to go to Manchester and prove that not just to the Kings, but maybe more importantly to the rest of the league that, you know, he's still a very good NHLer, so that's what he's got to focus on now.
And he was, man. I mean, I remember there was a time Mike Richards was one of my favorite players to watch in the National Hockey League, especially with Philly. Mm-hmm. Do you think, I mean, is it over for him? He's still a relatively young man.
You know, I think that this may serve as the great wake-up call. In fact, someone told me a story recently, and maybe it's not quite the same, but Luc Robitaille, after a pretty mediocre season by his standards, he had 16 goals 1 year, and this is back when everyone scored goals. And he had a meeting with management after a year in L.A., and they basically told him, we're not going to re-sign you if you don't. You know, you're getting older, you need to commit physically and hit the gym more. And Robitaille told people that was a real pivotal moment. He played 9 more years after that.
Wow.
and put up, you know, some pretty big veteran seasons. So sometimes these are the moments. You know, so we'll see with Mike Richards. I just think, and maybe I'm just being as naive as Dean Lombardi was last summer when he didn't buy him out when he should have, but I've just seen too many big moments and big games for Mike Richards to bury him yet. I think there's still a chance.
Thanks, Pierre. Get that Ninja Turtle state, man.
I'm on it right now. Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.